The Hoop Heads Podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoop Heads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist Jefferson Mason and marketing manager Nick Bartlett on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sure, accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoop Heads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoop Heads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
I learned as a high school coach, you better have some non-negotiables that you have for your team. And what I mean by that are, what are some things that you absolutely will emphasize on a daily basis? And if they don't do that, you are going to let them know every time.
Coach Don Showalter is a 10-time USA Basketball gold medalist while serving as head coach of the USA men's U16 and U17 national teams from 2009 through 2018. In May of 2016, he was hired as a coach director for USA Basketball's youth division. A high school coach in the state of Iowa for 42 years and a 9-time USA Basketball Developmental Coach of the Year award winner, Coach Showalter owns a perfect 62-0 record at the helm of USA Basketball's U16 and U17 teams. Coach Showalter compiled a 601 and 346 overall record during his 42 seasons as a high school head coach, including 16 district titles and 6 state tournament appearances. Don is the director of the Snow Valley Basketball School, one of the premier camps in the country for individual player skill development. You will not find a coach with a wider range of basketball experiences than Coach Showalter. He is a true servant leader who cares about the players he coaches, both on and off the court. If you have a chance to leave us a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast app, we would really appreciate it. Tell your friends in the coaching community about the show and make sure you're subscribed so you never miss an episode. Check out hoopheadspod.com where you can listen to every episode we've ever recorded and find out more about what drives our show. Coach Showalter shares a few pages of his famous mind candy that you want to jot down as you listen to this episode. Please enjoy our conversation with Coach Don Showalter from USA Basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Heads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome back to the podcast Coach Don Showalter from USA Basketball. Show, welcome back.
Hey, glad to be back. I know you guys have been kind of sequestered here, as everybody has. But your podcast has been great. I don't think I've missed one of them for many, many times. So you guys do a great job, and I applaud you for growing the game of basketball in your certainly with your podcast.
Well, we appreciate you. There's been no bigger supporter of our podcast in terms of contributing to our roundtables and just generally supporting the things that we're trying to do here with the pod. So we appreciate everything that you've done to help us, and we're thankful that you've been willing to jump back on with us. We wanted to have you on to, first of all, talk about the impact of the current situation with COVID-19 on USA Basketball and just some of the plans. Jason and I were talking a little bit last night when we think about the men's national team and the Olympics being postponed, and then thinking about the NBA season, which may or may not resume this year, and then it looks likely that next season will be pushed back. Maybe NBA players will still be in season next year when the Tokyo Olympics takes place. So just kind of give us the state of what's happening from your perspective in terms of USA Basketball, both at the junior level and then maybe also at the senior level as well.
Yeah, you know, that's a lot of unknowns, obviously. Yeah,
sure. But,
basically, we've up to this point, and you know, you take a look, it seems like I've been working our office has been closed since March 12th and actually March 13th, I think. But, you know, it seems like it's been 2 months instead of a couple weeks.
It sure does.
But, you know, we were in Colorado on March 12th, and we flew back. So that's only been, 13 days? But when we flew back to Iowa on March 12th from Colorado Springs, I got off the plane and got a text from my coworker who I work closely with. Said the NBA season has been the NCAA March Madness has been canceled. The NBA season had been canceled. I mean, all within 2 hours while I was on the plane. So things have changed. No kidding. Things have changed really quick on the forefront. Of course, when multi-billion dollar sports organizations cancel their events, you obviously know it's going to trickle down to many, many other events as well. And that's kind of what has happened. But as far as USAB, obviously we're a part of the FIBA organization, which governs international basketball. And then our youth division, we do our academies and those are events there too, which, academies, our open courts, our USA basketball, USA tournament that we do in July. So a lot of those things are under our youth 3-on-3, some big 3-on-3 stuff is coming up, but all those are on hold right now. Obviously, April 10th was when we were given the date of our office being closed up until then. Who knows what's going to happen after April 10th, but I think it's going to continue for several weeks beyond that. So all our events were canceled up through April 10th. Those events included, we had a mini camp during the Final Four, which we always do with our players, top 80, 60 to 80 players in the country, from all levels, all the way up from U16 through U18s. We bring them into the Final Four venue and have a mini camp, and then they also scrimmage the NBA academies. The NBA academies are in India and Africa and Latin America, Australia, Europe. So those NBA academies obviously were, didn't come. We didn't do that, but that's a big event for us, just to play those academies with international rules and kind of get ready for our training camps. And the fun part of that the kids missed out on is that our kids then also get a practice on the Final Four floor on Sunday morning. So last year in Minneapolis, you can imagine how excited our kids were to practice and scrimmage on the Final Four floor that was going to be used on Monday for the national championship game. So that's kind of heartbreaking for a lot of kids, obviously, but we knew that was not going to happen. So that event got canceled. Then, of course, everything around the Final Four was canceled too. We had NABC. We always do a session with the NABC, National Association of Basketball Coaches. We have a social, USA Basketball Social, which is always very well attended during the Final Four. So those all got canceled. And then after that, we have our scheduled Hoop Summit was in Portland, April 10th, which is 12 of our top seniors against an international group of U19 players. So that's a huge event for us. Draws about 7,000 to 10,000 every year at the Moda Center in Portland. So those are officially events that have been affected by the coronavirus and been canceled. They've been canceled. Obviously, they're not going to be, we didn't postpone those. They're in the cancellation mode. So we're not going to have the Hoop Summit this year. We're not going to have the other mini camp. So we're kind of a stalemate right now coming into end of April and May. We have, our U18 training camp is going to start around the 25th, 26th of May. And then they were to leave for, that group is going to play in Argentina, Rosario, first part of June. Our U17 World Championship players, we're going to start training camp with them on June 17th, 15th, 16th, 17th, somewhere in there, and then go to Bulgaria for their tournament. Now, officially, they have not been canceled. And I think FIBA is going to take a look at those both boys and girls tournaments this week and decide what to do with those. So those are always, it's kind of tough because you go by age groups for those. And so if you wait another year, you really miss that age group. Then you'd have to start over with U16s a year from this summer. But as of right now, we haven't got the official word that they're canceled. But our national 3-on-3 tournament in Colorado Springs, U18 national tournament there has been it's supposed to be at the end of April, and that's been postponed for a later date. Our 3-on-3 open tournament, which was supposed to be an Olympic qualifier in India, has been canceled or postponed. So just a lot of things like that are affecting what we're doing. And then we have Academy scheduled, Coaches Academy scheduled for LA in May 16th, 17th, I think, in LA. We haven't made a final decision on that yet. Probably won't hear for another couple weeks. And then also we have some gold camps coming up, and our gold camps are for higher skilled middle school players, 7th and 8th grade players. And it was going to be in Dallas at the end of May. So, we have a lot of events. We're just starting our event season. And boy, this was, it's obviously a big time for us and what's going on. And I'm sure everybody has heard that the Olympics have been postponed for a year. So that takes away some of the qualifying tournaments that our senior men's team have been doing. So we're backing up to the men's junior national team with the U17 and U18. That's basically on hold till we find out what FIBA has decided to do with that, those situations. And then, the options are cancel or move it to the fall. But then you know, there's all kinds of problems that arise because of the movement in that. Our senior men's team, obviously the Olympics was coming here, and that was a big thing for us. But it's right. It was the right thing to do. We certainly support, the USOC and what they in the IOC, International Olympic Committee, for going ahead and pushing the Olympics back until 2021. And we just had a conference call today, and we really don't know what that's going to look like, when it's going to be. They just said it has to be within the first 9 months of 2021. So somewhere between January and end of September will be the Olympics. And, we don't know when that'll probably be in the next week or so, what the details are on that. But it could be, we're thinking maybe it might be April, May. They could have, it could be in different, have different sports, have their Olympics at different times. So we just don't, we just don't know what's going to happen there yet. But we feel real confident that the NBA we're going to work well with the NBA and get players that can help us, whether they start their season late or end their season early, whatever, suspend the season a little bit. In that situation, there's a lot of, obviously, foreign players, that international players are playing in the NBA, so it affects them as well. So that's kind of it. June, we had Academy scheduled, the Coaches Academy scheduled for Dallas, second week of June 12th and 13th. You know, we just hope we can get some of that in, but if we don't, we'll postpone, and we're flexible, and I think everybody has to be a little bit flexible this time of year when you have what we're dealing with the coronavirus.
Yeah, no question. Flexibility is going to be key for everybody. I think if you look at the Olympics being pushed back, and obviously they waited, I think, probably as long as any major sporting event all around the world, they held on to try to see if there was a way that they could make it happen. And then eventually it became clear that it just wasn't going to work. And then, like I said earlier, Jason and I were talking last night about the NBA, and I know there's been a great relationship between USA Basketball and the NBA, so I'm sure that those two organizations are going to do everything they can to ensure that the best guys and the guys that want to be there representing our country get an opportunity to play in the Olympics. It'll be interesting I hadn't thought of or heard that you might have different sports going at different times of the year, which I would think from a basketball perspective, if that were the case, where there could be some flexibility, because as you said, it's not just, you know, we're looking at it from a USA Basketball perspective, but clearly there are lots of more international players in the NBA than there ever have been. And so all those teams and those players are going to be affected as well. So it would seem to be in the best interest of everybody, both the Olympics in terms of generating interest in the basketball tournament and in the various pro leagues, including the NBA, to figure out a way to make it work. It's just obviously with this season being shortened from an NBA standpoint, it seems like whatever's going to happen next year, they're going to want to make sure they get their 82 games in the full schedule. So I think there's probably going to be some challenges figuring out when that time is going to really work out so that they can get people, get players to play in the Olympics and see what happens. So it'll be interesting. It's definitely going to be, there'll definitely be a lot of discussions around that issue going forward, I'm sure.
Adam Silver, I just have a lot of respect for Adam Silver at the NBA. He's a very intelligent individual, and he seems to push the right buttons at the right time. I think, you know, right when Rudy Gobert had the coronavirus, right away he didn't waste any time and suspend the season. He's one to act quick, but he's really one of those people who I have a lot of respect for, and he's always worked well. They've always worked really, really well, closely with us, because their NBA is a big partner of the USA Basketball. So whatever decision is made on that, I'm sure is going to be for the best for players and everybody else. You know, our coaching staff has stayed intact. Popovich from the Spurs has indicated he's on board for sure for 21. It was kind of at the end of 20, at the end of two, at the end of this summer after the Olympics, it was, you know, that was kind of his extended piece of the contract for working with USA Basketball, but he graciously decided, he's going to see it out through whenever the Olympics are. So hopefully he can still be that coach for our Olympic team as well.
Yeah, that'd be great. Is any speculation on what might happen after that? Not if you have any classified information, but any thoughts about where or who might be in line to be considered for that position once Popovich is done?
Yeah, you know, we really haven't even crossed that hurdle at all yet. I think there's a lot of really good possibilities, both in the NBA and the collegiate world, that would be possible coaches for our senior men's team. Popovich may be in that mix going forward as well for another year. So, like I said, we really don't know. We haven't really crossed that hurdle yet at all, and so it'll be. That'll be something that'll be down the road after the Olympics.
For sure. Can you talk a little bit about, you mentioned while you were speaking earlier about some of the events that were canceled, you talked about some of the 3-on-3 events, and clearly with 3-on-3 joining the Olympics in what would have been this summer, but now next summer, I think it's going to lead to an explosion in the popularity of 3-on-3 as people get a chance to see the game. And I think as you look around the youth landscape, the more and more coaches that we talk to, the more you hear about the need for playing 3-on-3 and playing those small-sided games, whether it's in a league format or whether it's within the confines of a team practice. So talk a little bit about USA Basketball's stance on 3-on-3 and just kind of where you see 3-on-3 heading in the future and how USA Basketball is going to continue to promote and support 3-on-3 going forward here.
Yeah, I mean, we're really excited about the 3-on-3. Red Bull has done a great job of being one of our sponsors, and they're pouring a large sum of money into, and not only that, but they're doing a great job of marketing our 3-on-3. The 3-on-3, if you watch that on the international 3-on-3 on TV, it's really an exciting, fast-paced game. It's got a 12-second shot clock. Teams take the ball out underneath on a made basket. They have to take it out underneath the basket in the charge circle, and they can either throw it out to a player or they may dribble it out from there. They cannot be guarded. You can't be defended if you're standing in the circle to make a pass, but as soon as you dribble out, then you can be defended. So, the 3-on-3 and the 3-on-3 players are, you have to really make, I think we've made some great decisions on who to have play 3-on-3, because the game is different, so different from 5-on-5 that you need a little different kind of player. Your bigger, slower type of player is not very effective in a 3-on-3. Robbie Hummel, who played at Purdue that we're all kind of familiar with, he's probably one of our best, well, he is one of our best top 3-on-3 players. He's long, he can shoot the ball, he can get to the basket, but players like him are very, very good, and he's part of our open 3-on-3. Moving forward, we haven't officially qualified our teams yet for 3-on-3. FIBA set up there's a whole point system that is developed by FIBA because they don't want us or any other country just to pick, LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Durant. We can't do that for a 3-on-3. It's players. You have to be accumulate points by playing in tournaments, 3-on-3 tournaments throughout the whole year. So we send those guys all over the world. We send teams all over the world to play in 3-on-3 tournaments so they can accumulate points that will benefit us to qualify for the Olympics and qualify players for the Olympics. So that's a little bit different from that standpoint. People ask, I get the question, well, why can't you just ask, LeBron James and two other guys to play 3-on-3? Well, that's not the point of why it was developed. 3-on-3 was developed so countries really have a chance that can't play 5-on-5 or don't have the 5-on-5 capacity to make a good team. They can get 3 or 4 guys to play. So countries you don't even hear about much with 5-on-5 basketball have really good, some really good 3-on-3 teams. Africa, Nairobi, India, some of those teams that just could not function very well 5-on-5 certainly do a very good job 3-on-3. So that's kind of the basis for what we're looking at. And we'll have qualifying tournaments. We think we have enough points. If you have enough world 3-on-3 points, again, I don't want to bore anybody with a lot of the details, but you're in the top 3, that automatically qualifies you for the Olympics. And then the other five spots are through qualification tournaments. So India was one of those places where we were supposed to be at. Even if you qualify, you still need to go to the qualifying tournament. So I think our men had a great chance to qualify from the point total, because we had quite a few, we had a large number of points. And I think our women were, if they didn't qualify, then they had a good chance to do it through the qualification tournament. So that's the open part of it, Jason and Mike. But then there's also U18 tournament. And U18, we host the U18 National, which will be high school, basically high school juniors. That are really good. So we'll bring them in for a national tournament scheduled for the end of April and May. Again, we're not sure that's going to happen, but and then there'll be about 12 or 15 teams involved in that, and then we'll pick four players to represent the United States in the world U18 3-on-3 World Cup. I think that's in I won't say for sure, because I'm not for sure where it's at, but it's all internationally based. So I think last year was in might have been in Asia somewhere. I was at one in Spain 1 year. Took a group to Spain 1 year. I took a group to Indonesia 1 year for those tournaments. So so it's a really a big thing for USA Basketball to qualify for that. And we were going to host a big tournament in Vegas coming up. Of course, that's been postponed, but a lot of interest now, and obviously it's going to be a lot more interest in since it starts the Olympics. And I equate it to the fact that, you know, you beach volleyball, where you play two on each side. It's not a full volleyball contingent. That's kind of what it is for 3-on-3 basketball. You know, obviously, I'm a big proponent of 3-on-3, playing 3-on-3 in your regular practice session. So this is just an extension of that, and it should be really fun to watch. Crowds get into it, and it's fast paced, and it's a different type of game. The ball is, both men and women use the same ball. The ball is a little bit smaller than the men's ball, but the weight is the same as the women's ball. So a little different ball is being used by both men and women. But it's really fun.
It is. The international, the FIBA version of 3-on-3, if people haven't seen that and you don't know what it looks like, it's hard to visualize it until you see it. Because when you think of when you think of 3-on-3 half court basketball, a lot of us think of what 3-on-3 basketball may have been, the old rec league 3-on-3 and checking it up every time up top and people walking around to get matched up and all that stuff. And this game is not at all like that. It's super fast paced. And I think that's what really makes the game fun and enjoyable, both I'm sure to play and to watch from a spectator side of it. Just, I want to ask you one more thing regarding 3-on-3. Do you ever see a time, and this would just be pure speculation, but I'm just curious to get your opinion. Do you ever see a time where 3-on-3 basketball could make its way into high schools as a scholastic, as an interscholastic sport? So where two schools would be competing and you might have your 5-on-5 traditional basketball team, and then you might also potentially have 3-on-3, or even maybe some rural areas where it's difficult to field a full team. Maybe teams just go completely to 3-on-3. Do you ever see a time where that could potentially be possible?
Well, I mean, at this time, you know, probably not for in the immediate future, but, you know, who, you know, 10 years ago, who would have thought you'd have in high schools have as many sports as we have now, you know, female wrestling is coming into high school sports, obviously lacrosse and some of those kind of sports. So, I mean, who knows? Once it catches on as an Olympic sport, you know, that could change, that could really change the landscape of three on three a lot in the high school, in the high school arena.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's potential. Once you play it, once you see it, there's just so many more opportunities for kids to touch the ball and be involved. And so that's where, obviously, from a practice standpoint, if you think about being a coach and utilizing that within your practice setting to be able to just maximize the amount of reps that kids get. But I also think that it's just fun. And so I can see where eventually you could get to the point where it might take off. You think about, at least here in the Cleveland area, there's a handful of schools that are playing volleyball on the boys' side. There aren't many, but there are some. And I think back to when I was in school 25, 30 years ago, and male volleyball at the high school level didn't exist. So at some point, I won't be surprised if that ends up happening.
Head Start Basketball, along with members of the J. Billis Skills Camp staff, will be hosting the very first Prime Skills Camp, an affiliate of the J. Billis Skills Camp that is held annually in Charlotte, North Carolina. Prime Skills Camp will take place on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, June 26th through the 28th, and will be designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9. Prime Skills Camp will mirror the J. Billis Skills Camp in daily programming, teaching, coach-to-camper ratio, and quality of instruction. Prime Skills Camp brings all of the team-oriented individual instruction, focus on the fundamentals, and high-level coaching to young men aspiring to a high school varsity basketball experience. This camp is operated by Billis Camp Veterans and includes the J. Billis Coaches Development Program alongside the camp, ensuring that the quality of teaching and coaching at this camp is second to none. Please visit headstartbasketball.com or jbilliscamp.com for more information or to get registered.
So let's shift gears, not completely, but talk from this perspective about, you've had an opportunity through coaching the junior national team, through all the mini camps, through all the training camps you've been to, you've had an opportunity to be around some of the best players in the country at an age when they're still in the process of developing. So one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about tonight was some of the intangible things that the guys who have gone on to have tremendous success in the NBA, what has kind of set them apart from, I don't want to say the average player, because obviously the players that you're seeing at the junior national team mini camps, those are some of the best players in the country. But clearly we know there's a difference between a good player, a great player, and then the best, the guys who end up going on and having success in the league. So just talk about some of the intangible things that you see from the guys who go on to have the most success later in their careers. What are some of the things that you've observed over the years?
Well, you know, I get that question asked a lot, Mike, as far as what really separates, a good from a great player. And I think, even in our own high school teams, we see, we all have a best player. And so, as you think back on your teams, all right, what makes that player the best player? Now, obviously, they have to have some skills. The skills have to be really high level. They got to be able to do multiple skills really well. Shoot, defense, ball handling. So that's obviously one thing that you look at. But we're talking intangibles, because a lot of players have skills that are really good. And we see when we bring in, when we bring in 25, 35 kids for U16 or U17 this year, they're all really good, skill wise. And physically, they can jump, they're just physically gifted. And so, there's not much difference in those 35 that we bring in from the physically gifted standpoint. And same goes for your high school team. Now, obviously, you may have one player who's much more physically gifted, but he may not be the best player on your high school team. He may be the best gifted player, but you may have a more valuable player than your best gifted player on your team. So that's kind of what we're talking about. But I probably visit with every NBA scout at some point or other during the year about kids that we've had come through our programs. And now it's really interesting for me because now I spend most of November, December, January watching these kids in their own high school environment. And I'm on the, now I'm on the administrative side, organizing these mini camps, inviting kids, watching and then inviting kids in who I think would fit what we want. So that's been a little bit of a change for me because previously I coached those kids, but I didn't go out and watch a lot of the kids play with their own high school teams. So, as I do that, I always tell players that, when I go out and watch you, I like to get to the game early because I like to watch how kids that we're looking at, how they warm up, what their interaction is with their teammates. We think that's really important from building, from sustaining our culture with USA Basketball with high level players. You can be a high level player, and if you don't have good interaction with your teammates, and you're not a good teammate, or you're kind of a dog in warm ups and those kind of things, that sends a message that you're good, but you're probably not the level that we want for our USA Basketball. And so it comes as a shock to a lot of the players when we tell them that. The other thing is, that we think is really important is their body language. And we're pretty upfront when we say if you really give us poor body language or we see bad body language when we go out to watch you, there are enough players that are equally as good as you that have good body language. So we're probably not going to bring you in. That's probably going to be one, a strike that you're not going to get three strikes on that because we don't want players with poor body language who slouch in their chairs, don't listen to the coach, look up at the stands during a timeout. Somebody makes a great play on the floor. And you're not happy for them. That goes a long way in telling us what kind of person, player that you really are. And I think that separates good from great. But let me get back to, what NBA scouts ask me. One of the first questions, other than, because they really know how good a player is physically and skill-wise. But they always want to know more about the player, being a good teammate, and those kind of things. But the first question they always ask me is, are they competitors? Do they really compete? And, when I first started coaching with the junior national team, I thought, well, that's an interesting question. Is that's the first thing they want to know. How are they really? Do they really compete? And very interesting feedback from a lot of the scouts in the NBA is that they really think that being able to compete, just being a competitor, is something that a lot of players don't have. And so that's probably one thing that separates good from great. I'll go back to Brad Beal, who played for us in 09 and 10, was just one of my all-time favorites to coach. And, he was such a competitor. He was one of those who was absolutely not going to lose. Unfortunately, he's on a losing team right now with the Washington Wizards. But he was such a competitor that that it just it made everybody compete at a higher level. So that I think that's one thing that separates. And you know, sometimes we've had kids that aren't that level, aren't the level that really compete. And so when you take a look at that aspect of a player, and I think that's the same way on a high school team. Coaches that are listening, you know, you have a player that maybe not be skilled, but you know, if they can compete, I look back on, you know, teams I've had at City High and Mid Prairie, you know, those players were invaluable. I mean, they were more valuable than players who were more talented if they could really compete. One of the things we do that I'll throw out to coaches that are listening, because you may want to do it and put this down for your team next year, is we really chart wins and losses. So let's say we play 3-on-3, or we play 4-on-4 in practice, or we have a defensive transition game where we play called the UCLA drill or Laker drill. We chart individually who wins and who loses. So a player might be on a 3-on-3 team, and then we play 4-on-4, and we chart if his team wins or loses, but we chart him individually. And that if you do that, you will be surprised, I think, over, you know, you do that over a period of time, who really competes and who really really takes the bull by the horns and hates to lose. I you know, I'm not going to name any names, but there's been some really, really high draft picks that I absolutely said, you know, they have not won with us. They haven't won in our practice sessions. They haven't won. You know, we cut them because we just didn't think they could win. And sure enough, when they get to the NBA, they're struggling. So that, I think that's probably one of the big things I think separates good from great. And then I think the other thing that I always think separates good from great players is the love of the game. Do they really love the game? You know, a lot of times you get into big guys, especially, do big guys really love the game? You know, if they love the game, they're going to spend time in the gym. They're going to develop their shots, their footwork, their skills without, you know, if they come in, if you practice at 3 and they come in at 2:55 and they're done at 5 and they're home at 5:10, you know, you question how much they really love the game. And they can be very, very skilled, but I think that also says a lot. So I always make the point of one of the things that youth coaches need to do, if you're coaching a youth 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds, one of your main jobs is to have them love the game. And so they love the game, and they're obviously going to get a lot better. So I've kind of rambled there, but I would say being a great teammate, body language, how you communicate, ability to compete, and then love of the game, I think are some things that separate, in my estimation, separate good from great. And as I look over the 10 teams that I've coached with gold medals, you know, I can name you know, Jalen Suggs of the world, Tyus Jones, Trey Jones, you know, I could go on and on, but those guys really had a level, high level for competition. They could, Jason Tatum was off the charts with that, you know, as well. Harry Giles, who's been injured a lot, but I know he just made a really good comeback with the Sacramento Kings back in their starting lineup, was a high level competitor. So those guys all had great body language. They communicated well. They loved to compete, and you know, they had a great love for the game.
All right, I want to ask you one thing about the competitiveness piece of it. When you have a player who is on the level of a Beal or a Tatum in terms of competitiveness, and then you put them out on the floor with guys who are maybe just a step below that, do you find, have you found, both at the national level with USA Basketball and then thinking back on your high school career, have you found that when you have that super competitive kid on your team, that raises the competitiveness level of the rest of your players? Are they able to probably not get everybody up to the level that they are, which is why they're special, but do they raise the level of competitiveness within the practice setting for your team?
Oh, I mean, there's no question. You know, there's no question on that. I mean, everybody wanted to be on a Brad Beal's team or a Jason Tatum's team or Jalen Suggs' team because they knew how hard a competitor they were, and they knew they had a great chance of winning just because they had those guys on the team. So I think that's another, you know, you talk about great players raise the level of everybody else, and there's no question that they do that. I think we throw the term great around way too much. I don't think there's any really players that are you know, great is something that takes place over a period of time. You can have a great play, but that doesn't necessarily make you a great player. And so I think kids hear how great they are. But the same token, that word great is in my estimation, you know, is thrown around way too much, because there are very few even in the NBA, there's very few great players. There's probably 20, 25 players I would say are great players, and then the rest of them are role players. So those great players have to, you know, they're there because they raise the level of play of everybody else there.
Yeah, we had that discussion with your guy Mike Procopio, and Mike talked about how if you look at the NBA, there's really 20 to 25 guys that matter, that are indispensable, that have plays called for them, that are sort of the do everything guys for their team. And then everybody else has to fit in and figure out what is it that I bring to the table that makes me valuable to this team. And I think that that's a lesson when you think about from being a high school coach, or if there are players out there listening. Here we're talking about however many guys are on the league, 350, 400 guys in the NBA, best players in the entire world. And we're talking that 95% of those guys are role players. And so when you think about the number of guys at the high school or college level that become dissatisfied with their role and think they should be the star or get more shots or whatever it may be, and you think about as a coach, your ability to communicate what role a player should have and why they should have that role. And I think that's something that for coaches out there is critically important, is to get players to understand what their role is. And then on the player side of it, it's important to figure out what role your coach wants you to play and then play that to the best of your ability. And then the things that you mentioned, Don, the intangibles that these guys that are going to the NBA have, those are things that we can control. Like, I can control if I'm going to be competitive every single day. Now, I know there's an innate competitiveness in some people that isn't present in others, but we can all raise our level of competitiveness. We can all decide that we're going to have great body language. We can all decide that we're going to be great teammates. And I think that on an individual level, from a player standpoint, you can make the conscious decision to be able to try to improve those things. And then from a coaching standpoint, those are things that you want to put time in with your team. You want to emphasize those things, because if you can improve in those intangible areas, as you said a couple times, that can sometimes overcome a more skilled player, a more skilled team on the other side, if you have those intangibles working for you. And obviously that's with, you got to have a baseline level of skill clearly, but those intangibles, I think if coaches can focus on improving those with their teams, and players individually can really think about, hey, how can I improve these things that are within my control? We'd all probably be a lot better off, and the game of basketball would continue to grow and improve by leaps and bounds if we could accomplish that and get that message across.
I always kind of define a great player by the level, and you alluded to this earlier, but I always kind of define a great player by how much better he makes his teammates. You know, you can be a great player and not make your teammates any better.
Yeah, I think that's totally true. I'm gonna share a story right now today, Don, that happened with me today. So I was outside today, as I'm social distancing. I'm outside with my son, who's in eighth grade, and we were talking about different things, and we were talking about a player that my son played with, and just talking about the difference in skill level. And I said, the player that you played with in this situation, probably if I just look at the raw skills of that player, if I put you on the floor against a bunch of cones and I put him on the floor against a bunch of cones, he's probably better than you. But what's given you the advantage is you talk on defense. You're a positive person on the team. You know where you're supposed to be. You share the ball. You're not playing the game in isolation. You're playing understanding that you're part of this five-man unit. And I said, if you play for a coach like he was fortunate enough to play for, who recognizes those things, those intangibles are what push you over the edge. And now if you continue to improve your skill level and you combine skill with those intangibles, now you've really got something. But I think, as you said, it's really, really important that you look at the entire package as a player. And as a coach, you want to make sure that if you want those things to happen for your team and with your players, you've got to make sure you put an emphasis on those every single day.
Yeah. You know, that's a great point. And we've all had players, you know, if you're those of you that are listening, we've all had players who you just say, you know what, he's got to be on the floor. He's got to play because we're better when he plays. All right. Now, you know, you go back to, why is he better? Well, he brings out the best of everybody. He's a competitor. He loves the game. All those kind of things fit there. And they're things that are very controllable. I mean, some of the things that players, you know, can help their game out all the time are things that anybody, you don't have, it doesn't take outstanding skill level to raise your level of game up at all. You know, like you said, communication, being a great teammate, all those things you can control. So we try and really get that across to our, you know, our players. And you know, you talk about the will to win, you know, desire to succeed, and those kind of things, are really, really important. But again, those are things that players can't control.
Yeah, hopefully, as we get that message out and players hear it, and we all know that it's a challenge, and it's a challenge for players to sometimes be able to accept that role, and it's a challenge for players to, or for coaches to get players to accept that role. But I think the key is that you have to make sure that you're taking care of those intangibles, both as a player and as a coach. And if you do that and you raise the level in each of those areas that you talked about, I think you're going to have a more successful career as a player and more successful teams when you're a coach.
Coaches, we've teamed up with Coach Tyler Whitcomb so you can now purchase his exclusive new playbooks right from the Hoopheads Pod website. If you're looking for ways to improve your team next season, these playbooks blend affordability with the quality content that serious coaches are looking for. Just visit hoopheadspod.com/store and you'll find playbooks from John Calipari of Kentucky, Leonard Hamilton from Florida State, and Mike Young of Virginia Tech. Check out these great resources at hoopheadspod.com/store.
All right, let's move on from that topic to our last one that we wanted to talk about, and that's the five most important lessons that you learned over the course of your 42-year high school coaching career. What are the things, if you were to give five pieces of advice or five things that you learned over the course of that career, just maybe share some of those things with our coaches that are out there in the audience?
Well, you know, I think we all kind of evolve as a coach from the time you are a young coach, whether it be an assistant or head coach. And then, you know, after you coach 10, 20, 30, in my case, more than that, 42 years high school ball, and then involved with the USA team, I think we kind of all evolve as a coach. And so, you know, it's that old saying, you know, we didn't know what we didn't know as a young coach. And after you coach for a while, now we look back and now there are a lot of things I didn't know. But the time,
I always say I know a lot less now at age 50 than I knew when I was 25.
Yeah, I know. But that's a great question. I get asked that a lot as well. important, you know, what are some really important things that maybe I learned as a high school coach? I think number one is you got to communicate. You almost have to over communicate. When you think that you're over communicating, then it might be just right, and then you communicate again. I'm talking with administration, with players, with you know, parents. You can't isolate any of those people and have them support your program. So I think communication, over communication, is really one of those keys. I mean, communicate with your players. If you decide, you know, you're going to change the lineup and have a starter come off the bench, in my opinion, you better communicate that before you do it in a game night. Communicate with him why you're doing it. Here's where we're doing it. You know, we did that with Colin Sexton and Jason Tatum. They both came off the bench for us, and they ended up being MVPs for us in the World Championship. But, you know, we just didn't do it without them knowing. We sat them down. And in some cases, I'll call the parents. I would call the parents and say, hey, Johnny's been really good for us as a starter, but we think our team is going to be better with him coming off the bench. He's going to get same minutes of playing time or whatever, may help him come out of a slump, whatever. But I think over communication, you almost can't over communicate, is number one. I think the second thing is practice fundamentals the entire year. One of the things I always thought that my teams did really well as I look back on my teams is that we seemed to get better as the season went on and reached our peak at tournament time. I thought we always played our best basketball come district, state, tournament time. And I look back, part of that is I think we stress fundamentals in every practice. You know, we just didn't come out and do some free shooting and then work on some sets, out of bounds, whatever. We had good practices through the whole year emphasizing fundamentals and getting better that way. So I think that's one of the things that I would go back to and learn. Number three, as a high school, and cut me off here, Mike and Jason, I'm going too
No, you're far. Good. No, you're going. We're rolling.
And then number three, I think every coach must have, what are your non-negotiables? You know, I learned as a high school coach, you better have some non-negotiables. What are three non-negotiables that you have for your team? And what I mean by that are, what are some things that you absolutely will emphasize on a daily basis? And if they don't do that, you are going to let them know every time. So one non-negotiable, and that can change from team to team, but one non-negotiable is we always had three players that we sent to the glass. They were called crashers. You three are the crashers, and you're going to get to the glass every time that shot goes up. So a shot goes up and two of them are standing outside the paint, you know, we would call them out on that. That was a non-negotiable. Another non-negotiable is our wings. You sprint to the corner. We don't want you holding up at the 28-foot line or at the wing area. Now, if it's an early up pass, you know, you'll get the ball, but you sprint to and don't stop till you get to the corner. And that's something they'd be called out on every time that didn't happen. So those are non-negotiables might be another one. You know, coming off a screen, we want you to make sure you're trying off of setting side ball screen and rolls. Really work on getting to the kill area. So that was kind of a non-negotiable for us. So I think you have to pick out, what are three non-negotiables that you are going to hold your players accountable to? That's a point of emphasis. I think that's something I learned as a high school coach. And again, those may change year to year.
Did you have some non-negotiables off the floor, like in terms of standards in that way? I know you talked about ones that were on the floor, but did you have any that you would say you used a lot, or that ones that were common for you when you were coaching off the floor?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of those obviously is we always talked about being the gym is a classroom. So once you step across that end line, you are now in my classroom. And, you know, you're not there to visit with your teammate about prom or whatever it is. You're there. We're starting to work. So that's a non-negotiable. We have, you know, my assistants are on the court. We're ready to get going. When you step on that court, if you're out there early, then we're going to get some good shots. So that's a non-negotiable. Just little things like, and neither right or wrong, but you require to have, are your players required to have their jerseys tucked in during practice? You know, is that a non-negotiable or isn't it? If you don't care, that's fine. And it really probably doesn't make a lot of difference. But if that's one of the things that you would like to have your players do, but then you set that standard. And so now you have to enforce that. That's a non-negotiable. So if somebody comes with a shirt tail out, all right, you better, you as a coach, I need to address that. Or shoes untied. You know, the biggest thing I hate is how can you come to practice and have your laces untied?
Although I will say, Don, it's very interesting because when I played, I felt like me and every single person that I ever saw or played with wore high tops. Now, maybe there was one exception and everybody had their shoes tied super tight. And now you watch basketball and the number of guys that are A and girls that are wearing low top shoes. And I have so many kids that I'll see that will play in actual real basketball games with their shoes, not necessarily untied, but they're super loose. And I just don't know how you play with your shoes like that. To me, it's just has nothing to do with a standard. It's just, I don't know how you play like that.
Some kids like their shoes a little looser, which is fine, but don't come on the court with not tied up and ready to play. However you like them. So, you know, those are non-negotiables. I think as a young coach, I probably didn't realize how important non-negotiables were to our team. I think, you know, you guys have both been to Snow Valley. And I think, you know, as I talk to the kids in our mass group session, I try to give some non-negotiables to them. You know, hey, here's how you sit. Here's how you listen. And so you're developing some culture with your non-negotiables as well. So, number three, I think number four, I would say,
that was three, yep.
I would say another one, number four, I had, that I'm thinking about was conducting your practice efficiently is something I learned as a high school coach. And, there's a lot of things that you as a coach should control in your practice session. Number one is how much time you spend talking, which I think coaches talk way too much. I think players turn us off because we talk too much as coaches. The old saying goes, they have teenagers or young people have about 7 second attention span, which was done by a study at Stanford University. So 7 seconds. So if you're talking to them for 5 minutes, you know, you've lost them for 4 minutes and 53 seconds. So think about how much you talk. Secondly, think about how much you repeat things. Players will tend to not listen to you the first time if they know that you're going to say it again. So I'm always really conscious, and I didn't always do this as a coach, but I was always really conscious of when I say, all right, getting five lines, I'm not going to say getting five lines four times. I say it once, and then we do it. And kids catch on to that. I mean, even our elite kids, they understand, and they like that. I think coaches need to control the pace and the flow of practice, because sometimes players will try to milk that pace to their pace. And coaches need to control the pace. And how do you do that? I mean, you do it from maybe by having what I call a transition shooting drill between going from working on your offensive to your defense. So you go from offense, you say, all right, let's do our keyhole shooting drill. Clock's running. You're going for how long does it take you to make 30 baskets? So right away, you're into going from one to the other at a quick pace. Don't let players walk to lines. So a lot of times, if you come to practice, you'd hear me, even with our junior national teams, you'd hear me say, five lines, no more than four in a line, line up in the baseline. Then I would start counting backwards, seven, six, five. For some reason, when you start counting backwards, I don't even say anything. They know what that means. So that sets the pace of practice, because we all know if you let them do it their own pace, they're going to drag their feet. They're going to trying to figure out what line they should be in. No, that's a pace and flow that coaches should definitely control.
How important is terminology in making that happen, in terms of making sure that your players understand the names of the drills, so that when you're pulling out a drill, you're not having to say, well, let's do the drill where we kind of do this, and then you remember that one that we... How important is the terminology to make the pace of practice go at the pace that the coach wants?
I mean, you probably said the thing that I failed to, because that dictates the flow of your practice. All right, keyhole shooting drill. They know what it is. UCLA drill, they know what it is. So name your drills. And when you say it, they all know what it is. And so that is something that really controls the pace of your practice as well. So that's a great point. But again, as a high school coach, you know, coaching 42 years, a lot of these things I think I learned just along the way by going to clinics and going to camps and learning from other people, you know, how to do these things. So I think that's really important. So a couple other ones real quick. Am I good on time?
You're good on time. You got as much time as you need.
That was number four. So number five, I think, then is kind of goes along with non-negotiables, but, you know, develop standards for your program. I think probably the last 15 years I coached, I don't think I ever mentioned the word rules, rarely, if any. We didn't have rules. You know, rules have a negative connotation in my mind. When I was a player, you know, rules had a negative connotation. Here are the rules, blah, 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 blah. But you say, here are the standards. That's more of a, definitely more of a positive way to say, you know, here's what we're going to do, and we're going to do it in a very positive way. You know, so being on time, you know, that's a standard of respect. How do you respect your teammates and your coaches and everybody else? You're on time. That shows respect. So I think developing standards, and I'm big on standards. I give talks even to the corporate world on setting standards in the workplace, and I think those are things that come to mind. We have 15 standards, and Coach K was really good at setting standards. He would talk standards a lot with his senior men's team. You know, what standards do you think are important? Not rules, they're standards. And standards, individual standards, are something you hold yourself accountable to. So I'm going to hold myself accountable to playing great defense, or playing or being on time, or, you know, being positive with my teammate when something doesn't go right. Those are individual standards. Team standards are when you hold your teammates to that standard. Then you really have a special team. Best teams I've had, not including our national team, but best high school teams I've had were always teams who had kids on that team held everybody else to a high standard. You know what? No, you're not going to that party because there's going to be alcohol at it. That's it. You know, that's holding other people to that standard. And so, you know, we talk about it. I just think you can't probably talk about those things enough. We talk about our 15 standards. And like I said, I'm very fortunate to give many sessions to some corporate people that are, you know, they're amazed at some of the things that we do as coaches, but that can carry over to their workplace as well.
Rules tend to feel like they are very top-down oriented from an authority figure on down. And I think standards are much more at the level where players are able to hold each other accountable and hold each other to those standards. And as you said, the most successful teams, I think you could talk to any coach on any level from youth all the way up through professional. And when you have teams that everybody's bought in and players are saying, hey, we don't do that here. Hey, you need to do this. Those are the teams that really excel beyond what you might think they're capable of doing, because again, they're just together and they all have that same belief.
Kind of go along with that. I think some of the best teams I've coached were not my state tournament teams. I mean, some of my most fun years were teams that, you know, finished 13-9, but were just great kids and they had great standards, and, you know, nobody expected them to get 500 and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I think that's really what, you know, kind of thrills me about coaching, is when you have teams that really excel because of the individuals on that team had high standards.
Yeah. And I think that's something that somebody who is not a coach, who has never coached, would have a really hard time understanding how you might enjoy coaching a 13-9 team that did all those things that you just described versus another team that might have gone 20-2 but should have been undefeated and just was not fun to be around on a daily basis because every day was a struggle to get them to live up to the things that you want them to do. And I think somebody who hasn't coached would have no understanding of why you would feel that way.
Yeah, I've said that for years, and, you know, coaches talk about, you know, sometimes, and I think I've talked to a lot of coaches who've had some miserable seasons that were 22-3 or 24, you know, or
right, exactly.
And for a lot of different reasons, obviously, but I think when you develop standards and they, you know, some of the teams, a couple of teams I've had that I can think back on, we struggled with standards, and you know, when you struggle with standards, you're going to struggle on the court too, I think, at times. Even though you might win 20 games, but it may be such that, you know, your standards are set, but they have a hard time playing up to your standards. And I think as you, the longer you coach, you kind of, you really understand that and try and make that, a high point of each team.
Yeah. And I would think sometimes that the growth rate of your team as well, in terms of how well they're able to live up to the standards, where beginning of the season, it's a struggle, and midseason they're starting to get it, and by the end of the season, they really get it. And then I'm sure there you had other teams where right out of the gate, they got it, and then I'm sure you had other teams that never got it.
Yeah, and the fortunate thing with our national teams, and we spend a lot of time on developing standards. Obviously, with like all 35 of them when they come in, and players that don't buy into it, I think we cut them before they get to
right,
they
right.
get to be
go another direction
right.
really quickly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So those are five. Well, one more quick thing.
All right, bonus one. We're ready.
I would play more 3-on-3 in high school. I think what I learned as a high school coach, I think 3-on-3 puts each player in a position where they really have to play the game. They have to understand how the game is played offensively, and they really have to understand defensively how to cover. So I would probably, I would probably play more 3. Not that we didn't do it, especially toward the end of my career, but I think I would certainly recommend. That's one thing I learned, is that every day, 10 minutes of 3-on-3 would be very beneficial.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's something that me personally, again, we talked about how you evolve and grow as a coach. And I think if you look back on, I would look back on my career, the practices that I ran or the practices that I was in charge of, a lot of those practices early in my career would have been very drill oriented, and not as much of the small sided games. Now, again, did we scrimmage and go 5-on-5? Sure, we're working on offense and defense and that kind of thing. But I think now that there's a balance between your skill development piece of your practice, you have then the competitive piece of your practice where you're just developing basketball players. And I think that's what 3-on-3 really does a great job of, or what Snow Valley Cutthroat really does a great job of, is just developing basketball players and basketball IQ. And then the final piece of it is the 5-on-5 and going through and doing the things that your team needs to do. But to me, if I was to give a coach a template for building an effective practice, I think those are the three things that would be a part of it. You'd have some skill development, you'd have some IQ development, which would be the smaller sided games, 3-on-3, 4-on-4, and then you'd have your 5-on-5 total team development. And I think that's, if you just start with that as the basis for the structure of your practices, and you have one element of each of those in every practice, and then obviously you can figure out what skills that your team needs and what things you need to work on. You can put them in different situations. But I think if you use that as the basis, you're going to be in a pretty good spot in terms of preparing a quality practice for your team.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, that kind of goes along with, I think, looking back on teams getting better as the year goes on. I think that fits right in with that. I talked about, you know, we worked on fundamentals year from day one through day 65 practice, whatever. And the 3-on-3 is an important part of that. So I think that goes along with your team just getting better as the year goes on.
Absolutely. Don, we cannot thank you enough for spending an hour and 15 minutes with us tonight. I think the things that you shared, one, first of all, the update on what's going on with USA Basketball, and then two, talking about intangibles that players need to go from good to great, and then finally, the five things plus the bonus that you learned over the course of your career coaching in the high school level. I just think that it's been invaluable. I know the coaches that are out there listening always look up to you and the things that you've been able to accomplish in the game. So to be able to have you share with us for this time has been, again, invaluable. And we just like to say thanks. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Hey everyone, last year at the Junior NBA Summit, I came across an amazing company called iSport 360 and its founder, Ian Goldberg. Their youth sports app gets coaches, players, and parents on the same page. Your team can set goals, share player feedback, training videos, sticker rewards, player evals, and practice assignments. All of this to foster a healthy team communication and culture. If your team or club struggles to keep open lines of communication, especially among team parents, iSport 360 can help. If you want to empower your athletes to have more success, more confidence, and more communication with their teammates, give iSport 360 a try today. Shoot me an email, mike@hoopheadspod.com, or give me a call at 216-392-4059 to learn more.
Being without basketball right now is tough for all of us. So we've partnered with Pro Skills Basketball to offer you a 50% discount on their ultimate shooting guide and video program that will put players on a guided path to becoming the best shooter they can be. With 1 year's worth of workouts that includes games, drills, and competitions, players will gain access to a blueprint showing them what it takes to become an elite level shooter. If you're looking to improve your shooting at home, this program can help. Visit hoopheadspod.com/store to check it out.
Registration is now open at headstartbasketball.com for this summer's Head Start Basketball Camps. We'll be hosting camps for boys and girls in grades 1 through 6 throughout the greater Cleveland area. Get registered today and make sure you hit the courts with us this summer.
Thanks for listening to the Hoop Heads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.